Jason Watt, News Radio 1180 WHAM, proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000 Watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 4th of November, Anno Domini 2007, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 7 minutes after the hour...
Yeah, I know. I almost forgot who I was, too. Don't feel bad.
I know. Seven minutes after the hour, we see that Rob Linton is back.
I am.
Having been one step ahead of the law in the Midwest.
Solitary confinement.
What's that? Solitary confinement? Yeah, if that's what you want to call it.
Listen, 2 weeks is not bad. I mean, I've known people who got popped for a lot more for the same offense.
I just think
that's important to know. You got off easy. I did.
No, it's good to be back. It really is.
I'd love to say it was good to have you back.
Excellent. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
No, we missed you, Rob. Jessica was wonderful.
Why was he good?
But, yeah. Well, we're having notices of problems with the new Mac upgrades. Mac users are reporting a number of problems with their wireless connections after updating to Leopard, according to traffic on Apple support forums. Users describe one issue as a steadily degrading wireless link from their upgraded Macs. When you connect to your wireless network, your transmit rate will be 54 if you're using a 54G standard, says someone identified as None of GS. If you start up a download or something that occupies your bandwidth, even LAN traffic, you'll notice that the transmit rate drops to 11, then to 3, then to 1, until finally your downloads will drop, your iChat connections will fail, and your browser will not load pages. Numerous confirmations of the same symptoms were posted by other users. Among them was Gregory Sims. I am having the same problem. After installing macOS 10.5, my Power Mac G4 is very slow on the internet. The connection is worse than dial-up. I've never had this problem with 10.4 Tiger. My MacBook Pro is working fine with a fast connection. I'm sorry to say the 10.5 seems more like beta software than a $129 upgrade. I hope this problem is fixed soon, or I will have to go back to 10.4. Users suggested a variety of solutions, including applying the post-Leopard upgrade Apple said fixes login issues, as well as a vaguely stated connecting to some 802.11bg wireless networks problem. Other ideas range from finding and possibly removing the Apple AirPort 2.kext file, to toggling IPv6 on and off. Commonalities between users reported using the problems were difficult to define. Some, for instance, said they had used the upgrade option to move to Leopard, while others said they had picked archive and install, or even wiped their drives clean before installing Leopard from scratch. Nearly all, however, made a plea similar to this one by Oxus. Apple, fix. Please. Leopard is useless. So have you seen or heard much of that, Steve?
We had a couple of people run into the blue screen of death, which ended up to be an incompatible third-party system extension, so ignoring the fact that you're supposed to remove all those first, or check compatibility at least. And then I ran into one interesting problem there. There's a new version of the soft RAID that Apple uses. And so I had one customer trying to upgrade all their old machines, and they jumped 10.4, so they went from 10.3 to 10.4, so to 10.5. So their RAIDs didn't work, so I had to rebuild all their RAIDs, which was annoying. Couple of people have reported the wireless issues, and usually just reinstalling that network keychain and network update has fixed it. One of the big problems that we see on the net all the time is that one person has a problem, posts it to 50 boards, and suddenly everyone has the same problem.
Yeah, right.
It's just one guy posting it forever.
Right.
But it's a new OS. There's bound to be little issues. We'll work them out as we go through. But the biggest thing is the third-party hacksies, as they've been been called, from a company called Unsanity. So if you've got something like Finder Windows or Label or Font Card, or if you open your system preferences and you have anything under Other, those are probably hacksies.
Right. And removing them should make it work fine.
Right. Now, the trick is if you've already installed Leopard, you can't remove them because Leopard won't boot. So there's two fixes there. If you can boot into single-user mode and go down to the command prompt, you can delete the files. Or if you can boot another disk so you can get to a desktop, then you can remove those files. Or you have to reinstall Leopard and do what's called an archive install, which removes the old operating system and puts a new, fresh operating system in. so that it doesn't have any of those third-party hacksies in them.
Right, all right. Huh. All right, our first caller today, Michael from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Michael. What's your question?
Well, I'm not real sophisticated as a computer person.
And, that's okay.
And I do some work in a variety of locations, one of which is I've been working more and more in the Southern Tier, and I am probably a mile to 2 miles away from the nearest phone connections or DSL or cable, anything like that. And I'm wondering about wireless and satellite-based things. Now, I know that Web TV, which was somewhat ancestral, was, my understanding, bought and killed by Microsoft. And but I'm wondering, what the wireless, you know, through cell phone towers, what, is that really reliable? Does it work well?
It does.
Well, those are two questions.
Right. It does work well. It's actually pretty reliable. I beg your pardon. I'll be doing this throughout the show as I hack up yet another long. It is fairly reliable. I know a number of friends who have it. Most of them use it here in the city, so it's maybe not a fair test. But I know some people who have run it in the Southern Tier specifically and in the West, in the Leroy sort of area, you know, in between anything else. And they seem to think it's fine for them. It's not terrifically fast,
there's
but
actually,
for web and email, you're good.
There's actually three different speeds that it does, depending on how close you are to the cell tower and what technology the tower has on it. You'll at least get dial-up modem speeds, you know, 50K, and then there's the original, if you go with the EVDO from Sprint or Verizon, the original standard was 500 or 600K, and the new Rev-A standard is about 1500K. So it's a lot slower than going with cable or DSL, but yeah, oftentimes that's your only choice.
Well, the only phone connections that I've had and through the provider that I use, I have not been able to connect to anything better than about 36K,
right,
which is interminable when you're trying to even download a basic text.
Right. This will be much faster than that, at least.
Okay.
Now, here's a question. Who is your phone system provider?
I've got a Sprint account for cellular, and then of course.
And how do you, how many bars do you get when you're in those places?
About three.
Then you should be fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Be good.
Go with the, you know the Sprint at least works.
Okay.
So you should be fine. All right, we got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton has returned to us, ladies and gentlemen. Me, Nick Francesco, and all of you. It is 14 minutes after the hour. We're Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 18 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. I hope all of you remember to set your clocks back. I hope all of your computers were properly patched.
The thing of it is, though, if you don't set them back, you won't be late for an appointment.
That's right. You'll just be an hour early.
Yeah.
All right. As many as 1 in 6 PCs may have active spyware or malware infections. A recent study performed by UK security vendor Prevex of 300,000 PCs shows that 15.6% of those machines had at least one active spyware or malware program installed. These programs, which include keyboard loggers that record keystrokes, information stealers, and fake anti-spyware, are emerging at rates of 5,000 to 10,000 per day. Of these 300,000 PCs, the ones with no security software installed at all had infection rates of 60% higher than those running some sort of antivirus, anti-malware, or other security program. Users benefit from running anti-malware scans because not only will they reveal hidden programs on a computer, but doing so will also force users to think twice about their surfing habits. Malware and spyware are often downloaded in the background from websites, many of which are known to spread unwanted or malicious code. Prevex also said that of the business customers that scan, on average 59.5% find at least one infected PC in their organizations. The company claims that major security vendors aren't keeping up with malware writers. Over the past 3 months, the ability of security software from Microsoft Symantec and Trend Micro to detect newly released spyware and malware hovered between 10 and 50%, they say. All right.
So that means only 10% of the new spyware is being discovered by the anti-spyware programs?
By the main ones, yes.
So use a minor one.
Use AVG.
Use AVG, yep.
All right, our next caller is Patty on a cell phone. Welcome, Patty. What's your question?
Good morning, guys. I listen to your show every weekend. Thanks for all the help you've given me.
No, thank you.
Most recently, I don't have this problem at home. I have it at work. We recently upgraded to Office 2007, and we use Windows XP. We're on a network of about 600 employees. And for some reason, I can't use my scroll wheel in Word. I can use it everywhere else. In fact, I can even use it up in the ribbon bar in Word, but I can't use it to scroll or to zoom in my document. It works in Excel. It works everywhere else. It just doesn't work in Word. And it's happening to one other person that I know of in my company.
Hmm. What brand mouse is it?
It's a standard Dell Optiplex computer. I can't remember. I'm not at work. But it's a standard mouse. It's not an optical mouse. It's just the mouse that came with my computer. Nothing fancy.
It's a USB mouse.
Yep.
Might want to check for driver, updated driver.
Driver update, maybe.
I mean, but it's weird that it's working fine in Excel and the rest of them, but in Word that it has an issue. The worst case scenario, you know, if you go ahead and go to the Dell website, and on the side of your machine, you'll be your code to find out what drivers are correct for your machine.
Okay.
You can then download those drivers, see if that helps. I won't guarantee that it will. It's just kind of unique that it's in just that one program.
Yeah.
And like I say, worst case scenario, you know, you won't do any damage. It'll just update it a little bit.
Yeah.
And if that doesn't, then you might want to look at perhaps getting a different mouse. I mean, mice are so cheap nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Or at least swap with somebody else at work and see where the problem goes.
You go in early on a Saturday.
Yeah, the Midnight Wiring Society.
Yeah. And you requisition a new mouse from somebody else.
Yeah, you can get new mice, you can get better chairs, you can get better monitors.
Yeah. It's endless, you know, a letter opener, a better stapler, new phone system that doesn't cut out every time you grab it.
That sounds like a new definition of the term open office.
Yeah.
What I have found on the net, most people are having essentially who are having this problem did the same thing. They changed mice.
Okay.
So just go into the office early. Just make sure your name isn't written on the bottom of the mouse.
Right.
No.
And that the one you test with also doesn't have their name on the bottom.
Yeah, you don't want to exchange with the person that's having the same issue as you.
Right. Okay.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Let us know, though.
Thanks. Yeah. That's so odd.
But yeah, that it's working in the other applications and not working in this one.
It is so odd. All right, our next caller, Jerry from Rochester. Welcome, Jerry. What's your question?
For about the last 3.5 months, every time I try and hook up into the internet, it tells me that my homepage cannot be displayed. So I'll try another page, and it tells me that can't be displayed. The only way I can go anywhere is to go to the Yahoo menu and say Yahoo Mail.
What OS are you running?
I have XP and I have dial-up. I don't use it that often.
Okay, so what you're saying is the only page that works for you is Yahoo Mail.
To get going in there. Thereafter, I can go other places.
What Internet Explorer are you using? What version?
7.
7?
And this have you tried this started with Firefox?
Have I tried? Oh, when I first got it new, it's 2.5 years old now. I did try Firefox. And I got all kinds of spyware. It was driving me nuts, and I said, I'm not using this anymore.
No, you didn't get it because of Firefox.
Well, Firefox told you it was there. With Internet Explorer, it just lets it through.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Who's your internet provider?
PeoplePC.com, I am.
A lot of times, I don't know if they have agreements with Yahoo, a lot of times with some of the internet providers, especially like PeoplePC or NetZero or Juno, you have to go to their webpage before you can go to any other web page.
Okay. Well, since I've had them, I never had to do that. But about 4 months ago, I had to, and I get nowhere calling them. And they even send me written instructions that it's everything I've already done or know.
Well, what happens when you try to go to a web page first?
It tells me this page cannot be displayed. You may not be connected, this or that. You know, it wants to troubleshoot it. And I am connected.
Have you tried emptying the temporary internet files in the cache?
Yeah, I've done that too.
I'm wondering if it's just...
Every time I do that, it takes longer to connect once I do get through Yahoo, and then I can go to Google, you know, and get where I want to go.
Right.
And then it really takes...
I'm wondering if it's just taking a long time to establish the dial-up connection. And after she tries 3 or 4 pages...
It works.
It finally works, yeah.
Yeah, it tells me I can't go there, and it's my homepage.
Right. Well, here's a couple of things to try.
Mm-hmm.
First, once you dial in, wait 2 minutes before you try to go anywhere.
All right.
And then try your homepage, because as Steve says, it may just be taking a long time to establish a connection, although it is a little odd that it would always hit just when she goes to Yahoo Mail.
Well, once I click it twice, it should be going to the homepage and doesn't. So I let it sit there and I wait and wait and wait. And then it tells me it can't go there.
Well, when you click your internet dialer, well, you may not have the speaker turned on. You should open your internet dialer, you hit connect, and then you should hear your dial tone, you should hear it dial, you should hear the other end answer,
right.
It'll make all the screeching sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And then the sounds go away, but it still takes a few moments to finish the connection.
Other thing, when you open up Internet Explorer, does it automatically go to your correct default homepage?
It used to, yeah.
What I would do is, with it up, if you go to Toolbar, go to Internet Options,
mm-hmm.
and the very first screen up at the top, it should display, you know, what page it's defaulting to.
Okay.
Make sure in there that it is set to the page that you want it to go to, that it didn't get changed. Some spyware will go in there and change your Internet Options to go to their page, or they put in about blank.
Mm-hmm.
So go in there and set it to, make sure it does say www.yahoo.com or whatever default page you want it to, and say apply, use this as your current page, and then say okay, and then try it. It might have gotten changed.
And I might suggest that if you have a friend with a broadband connection, you get him or her to download all the files from the Security Tango and burn them to a CD for you. Or go to Dave and get the CD from him with all the updates on it.
Okay.
And then just check your whole machine over, dance the Security mm-hmm. Tango on it.
I have all kinds of spyware and the McAfee stuff there too, you know, for viruses. I've got three.
Well, but
spyware.
McAfee is not catching all of them in the first place.
That's
and
spyware.
Secondly, if you in fact got your McAfee from with your machine.
No, I got a brand new one yearly.
Okay, all right, all right.
I don't like the new one either.
No, nobody does.
It's terrible.
Yeah, it really is.
It takes over my computer.
Yes.
I think that has something to do with me not being able to go anywhere.
Yep.
Because you could see it. It says it's downloading. And I go, oh, wow.
Yep.
And I have Spy Sweeper, SpyBot, Search and Destroy, and eWittle.
Yeah, you're doing pretty good there. But I would suggest, I don't find anything about other people, PC people, complaining about this.
Really? And like I said, I can't even call them and talk to them.
Right.
So I emailed them. They gave me all these instructions. I did it. I've already done it. I just thought I need to change.
Jerry, to what homepage are you set in your browser?
Yeah,
well, that's what she's got to check and see.
Yahoo.com.
That's what I've already told.
Then I even tried changing it to Google, and I had the same problem. Like I said, it was fine until about 3.5-4 months ago.
Right. If you change your homepage to Yahoo Mail, does it come up correctly the first time?
I haven't done that.
Try that and let us know. We have to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 31 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. All right. Trojan Horse, targeting Mac OS X, a new Trojan Horse designed specifically for Mac OS X. All you Mac fanboys, step back, because it is true now that you have your own specific OS X viruses.
It's not a virus, it's a Trojan horse.
It's a Trojan horse, yeah, fine. Has been discovered on several pornography websites, so Steve knows all about it, that have hijacked web traffic, according to a security firm named Intego. I'm not sure which. Affected systems are used to hijack some web requests that lead users to other phishing sites or simply display ads for other pornographic websites to generate ad revenue. Phishing attacks may lead users to believe they are surfing to eBay, PayPal, or various banks, when in fact they are accessing specially crafted mock-ups designed to retrieve username and passwords for those sites. The Trojan, titled OSX.RSPlug.A, I love these names, is rated as a critical risk by Intego and is known to affect Mac OS 10.4, that's Tiger, as well as Mac OS 10.5, Leopard. Intego is testing prior versions of Mac OS 10, but believes them to be vulnerable as well. The Trojan claims to install a video codec necessary for viewing free pornographic videos on Macs, but when users click on the still images to view the content, they are directed to a web page stating that they must download a new version of a codec to play the movie file with QuickTime. Safari users who have checked the open save files after downloading option in general preferences will find that the disk image, which is downloaded to their Macs, automatically mounts, and the installer application will automatically launch. So apparently it thinks it's a safe application. Proceeding with the installation installs the Trojan horse and requires users to enter their administrator password, which then, of course, grants the malicious software full root privileges. No codec is installed, and users who return to the website simply receive another download request. The Trojan itself is a form of DNS changer using the scutil command to change the Mac's DNS server, a service that translates host names like soundbites.org to their numerical IP addresses. Using a poison DNS server, that is to say one with fake addresses, the Mac hijacks some web requests for phishing or to generate revenue from pornographic advertisements. What's more, under the Mac OS 10 Tiger 10.4, there is no way to see the changed DNS servers in the operating system's graphical user interface. Although in Leopard, users can see the change of the advanced network preferences, but they are dimmed out and can't be removed manually. Intigo says that all versions of Mac OS X include the scutil command, suggesting that all servers are vulnerable to the new Trojan. So, ladies and gentlemen, you now have your own full-fledged, real, no kidding, Mac-only specific virus. Congratulations. Welcome to adulthood.
Nick, you said in the end of that report that it was for servers.
No. Every version has it.
But it changes your DNS server entry. So when you type apple.com, it sends you to a bad web page first.
Right. When you type in apple.com, the internet doesn't understand apple.com. It only understands numbers. So it looks at your DNS server entries, and those are just places on the web that will do the translation for you. And it sends the request to one of those servers and gets back the numeric address of apple.com. In this case, the DNS servers are hijacked. They're not the real ones. It sends you to their own, which have fake addresses so they can steal information.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. Yeah. So those of us that can be fooled into loading this Trojan will have that effect.
That's right. And right now, it's pretty clumsy.
Well, it
could come from any place to anyone.
Yeah, it's as bad as the Leap A Trojan that came out a year ago. You know, you have to go to a specific pornographic website currently. You have to get faked into thinking that a pornographic website would give you a QuickTime update.
Right.
And then you have to give it your password. So a lot of it goes back to just safe computing practices. Don't go places unsavory. Don't just click yes. You know, take a look at it, see what you're doing.
Yes, but let us return to the salient point, which is right. The Mac people have their own virus now.
Trojan horse.
Congratulations, you are an adult. Our next caller, Bonnie from Springwater, who has some information about People PC.
Hi.
Hi.
I was listening to the woman that called before.
Jerry.
Yeah.
I had the exact same thing. It won't even give you, all it says is you have your background screen, the screen that you have when you enter, you know, to turn the computer on. And it just says this page cannot be found and you can't go anywhere else. You can't get to People PC from that, even though you've gone through the dial-up and everything. And after dealing with this for months, I just switched purveyors. I just couldn't.
There you go.
And I called them up and they're like, well, let me help you. I said, no, I am beyond help. You obviously have a problem and I don't want to have to deal with you anymore. There are other people out there around the same price. I don't use my computer that much. I don't even know some of the things you talk about, but I listen to you all the time.
Well, thank you.
And, you know, I'm always calling my son saying, oh, this is happening because he goes everywhere on the internet and he's sure. Very savvy. I'm not, but I like to be able to use it when I want to use it. And
exactly.
I went to a site that I go to all the time. It's a locked site, but it took me literally an hour and a half to get people to people to respond, to get to Mozilla, then to get to the website I wanted to go. And now I changed purveyors and everything's fine. I can go wherever I want, just the way I used to.
Yep.
Good for you.
And that's, well.
So I believe it's them. They've got something wrong with their dial-up and they just
aren't.
Well,
clearly if you changed providers and the problem went away, that's an indication right there.
Yes, that it's got to be them. It's not us.
Cool.
And I would advise the same to this lady because you can drive yourself crazy trying to figure out and blame yourself as I kept, you know, my son's like, what did you do to the computer when he came up to visit? because you just can't go anywhere.
Right.
And one of the problems that happened recently is one of the other low-cost carriers, USA DataNet, shut down their dial-up service and handed off all their customers to People PC.
And when I called PC, I mean, I was transferred to somebody who had such a thick accent, I could barely understand them, which frustrates me even worse.
That could have been in Texas, too.
Exactly. It could be anybody, but usually that's what I end up with, is somebody who can barely speak English, and I can't understand them. They obviously think it's me, you know, and let me fix you or let me help. They can't. They don't, and they can't.
Well, what I'm thinking may have happened is that since USA DataNet shut their dial-up service, and tens of thousands of customers have just been pushed to People PC, People PC services are being overwhelmed and overburdened.
It's very, very possible. They're very slow. Very slow. And I think I was working on a 7.0. I'm now on a 9.0. It doesn't mean a whole lot to me, except that it's quicker.
That's all that counts.
And it's still dial-up.
Right.
That's all I can get out here, unless I want to go wireless. And I don't use it enough to warrant it.
Right.
I just thought I'd tell you that she's not alone, and I would suggest she go with a bigger company that could offer a better service.
That's a great idea, Bonnie. Thank you. Jerry, I assume you're still listening.
Of course she is.
And so, of course she is. And so there's your solution. Just if enough people quit People PC, they'll get the message. We're going to take another break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 30 minutes after the hour. It is 40 minutes after the hour on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Well, Leopard's Firewall is a mess. It breaks Skype as well. Leopard's Firewall is confusing, inconsistent, switched off by default, and incompatible with some applications, according to a security researcher who spoke Friday after analyzing the new security tool. This firewall is a mess, Rich Mogul, a security consultant and former Gartner Inc. analyst, said, after spending 2 days digging into the new firewall's capabilities. It's a step back from Tiger's firewall. I was originally pretty bullish on Leopard's security, and I still am on the concepts, but the implementation makes most of its advantages ineffective or unusable. The firewall in Mac OS X, Leopard, uses a bare-bones interface. Earlier this week, Mogul called it so simple as to be nearly useless. It offers users three options. Allow all incoming connections, block all incoming connections, set access for specific services and applications. Other settings let users switch on the stealth mode, which is supposed to cloak all ports on the Mac, preventing the attackers from even seeing the machine when scanning the internet for open ports and probing for potential victims. After the Leopard upgrade, the firewall is set to the first, allow all, which means, in fact, that the firewall is switched off. Users with machines that have had the firewall turned on also saw their firewall turned off after Leopard was installed. Block all does seem to block actual connections, but shared ports are detected as open filtered on a port scan. And unless users turn on stealth, some services like Bonjour, which is Apple's network device locating technology, are seen as open by scans no matter what firewall setting is selected. Only by using block all with stealth enabled are shared services actually invisible. In short, block all seems to block inbound connections, but port show is open filtered. Stealth mode works, but partially, but some ports still show on a port scan no matter what. Bonjour is always accessible unless you're in stealth mode. These inconsistencies pale against the firewall's ability to break some applications without warning. While testing the firewall's set access option, Mogul discovered that Leopard prevents some applications from running. So there are still some things that clearly need to be ironed out about Leopard. Back to our phones. Our next caller is Jim from Webster, New York. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
I installed Ubuntu 7.10 on an old gateway computer here during the week, and I can't get it to connect to the internet.
All right, what?
I've got a Roadrunner, and I ran it through a router, but I also tried just running a wire straight from the cable modem to it, and that didn't work. And I've gone through, you know, like their help section here and everything,
right?
And it tells you to put in like sudo if down, and then put in eth1 in the terminal, And then it says replacing ETH1 with the name of your network interface. And I'm not, what right. does that mean, name of
well,
your
Well, what you want to do is you want to open up a terminal.
Yes.
Right? And in the terminal, using the sudo command, sudo,
mm-hmm.
type ifconfig.
Okay.
And it will then show you all of your connections, eth0, which is Ethernet 0, eth1, Ethernet 1. You may also see WLAN 0, WLAN 1, or ATH 0, or ATH 1.
Mm-hmm.
But you should also see in the upper right-hand corner a couple of icons. One is a little running man, and next to it, although they often come up in different order, should be a little double computer symbol. That's the network itself.
Okay.
If you see that, click on it, and it should say wired network or manual configuration.
Yeah, I've been there, and I've put it to wired, and then I've also selected, was it DHCP?
Right. Now, are you connected by wire, or are you connected by wireless?
Wire.
And what about Ethernet drivers?
They should be installed automatically.
Yeah, it should.
Yeah.
This is, well, like I said, this is the 7.10, being the newest and the latest, would it have?
That's what I'm running here, yeah.
Yeah, it should have all that stuff already installed. Then, right.
If you right-click on that connection, make sure Enable Networking is checked.
Yes, got that.
And then click on Configuration Information, and it should tell you what interface it's connected to and what speed and what driver.
Okay.
And if that's not working, then you want to try the that IF F0 down, IF down F0, and then IF up F0 to bring it back up again. Try that. Let us know. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you at 49 minutes after the hour. We're Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 52 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Well, kiddies, it's that time again. Go put your footy jammies on, grab your mug of hot cocoa, sit in Indian style in a semicircle on the floor around the rocking chair, and if we can slap them awake, it's time for Uncle Dave's Story Hour. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
Oh, you don't have to get me going this time.
Uh-oh.
Yep. We primed. All right. As you know, especially you,
especially
I do the CD.
Yes. Yes, all you right. do. The CD he's talking about, of course, is the Security Tango CD. When you go to the Security Tango page, you can print that out and do it all. The bottom of the page, it tells you to call the great and mighty Lori Lynch, who will give you, who will be able to send you, or you can pick up
the
or whatever,
yeah,
the CD with the extra stuff.
Well, I think I'm going to have to put another disclaimer.
Now, here we
you
go.
You know, I hate this crap. Yeah, sit there. Well, you get it, and I send it, and when Sam ever, you know, hands them over the counter, we say, you know, once you buy it, it's yours. Well, you get the folks, mail one out, they send it back. Oh, I didn't need it. They've already opened it, as I tape it in the market. Once it's been opened, it's yours, folks. I ain't taking it back. Just so you could copy all the utilities onto their computer, which I know that's what they're doing, and then send it back, and then they want all their money back? No. N-O. Sorry. If you don't want it, then don't order it. And, but and you know, the time not, and effort it took
right,
me to do it.
Dave's not making any money on it. The $10, is it?
No, it's only five bucks if you come in, $6.50 if you mail it.
That's for the mailer and the postage. Dave could charge you $50 of his labor time to put it all together.
Well, see, without that even in counting that up, by the time you figure out the materials, the labor, or the mailer, and because I put it in a padded envelope, and the postage, and that, and the CD, and the thing that it goes in, the sleeve, I may be making, I think I totaled it up, 7 cents.
Why you?
But I'm getting so rich. And then they turn around and say, like I say, I've had a couple come back and say, no, I didn't find it useful. I want my money back. Wrong. Once you buy it, that's it. No refunds, not on that. Especially since it's been opened and it was turned around.
Right.
And you can tell it was used. Hello? It ain't happened.
Right. We had a guy once, I used to work in a computer store, as you know.
Yeah.
I've since gone straight. We had this guy who won a contest. Comes in, he says he won this contest, and he wanted $100 worth of software, which back in the day was an awful yeah. lot of software. And I said, I don't know anything about this. What contest? We didn't have a contest. So, no, it's a national magazine. And they had a contest, and I won, and I want my software. So I called the magazine and they said, oh yeah, absolutely legitimate. We'll, you know, we're okay, fine. So I gave the guy $100 worth of software. He left, comes back the next day and says, you know what? I changed my mind. I don't want this software. I want something else. So I called the company. I said, look, here's what this guy's done. We know he opened it and copied it all. And now he wants to go again. So they said, all right, go ahead and do it. We'll pay you for both. We'll pay you $200 because we can't really resell this. Okay. So he does. The next day he comes back again. He said, they're all open. He says, no, I don't want these. I want to try something else. Yeah. I said, what am I, stupid? I told him, no, you've done this twice, but you know what? I'll call the company again. And they said, no, we don't. I said, no, they're not going to do it. We're not going to do it. Nobody's going to. So he starts screaming and yelling in the store. I got hundreds of people in the store. We were very popular. And he said, and he starts telling him he won't honor his warranties or whatever. And I stood up on the counter, which if you've ever seen me, you know, that took me a while. I stood up on the counter and I said, let me tell you the real story. And I told him this story, and they all booed him. They actually jeered him out of the store.
Cool.
He left without his software, which he left on the counter. He walked out. I have never seen him since to this day. You know, we were nice once. We bent over backwards twice. The third time, no.
But people try to get away with it. And, you know, I had a...
And for $5, for God's sake.
Well, this is it. You know what I mean? It's not like I'm trying to rip people off. It's just...
No. All right.
All right.
Time for Uncle Dave's shot. We'll be putting him back in his little rocking chair. And we may have to actually strap him in this time. So clean out your mugs, put your clothes back on, and we'll put Uncle Dave back on the shelf for another week. Until Story Hour with Uncle Dave next time around. My golly, he got exercise today. All right. We've just got a minute and a half. Chris, you actually had a question.
Yeah, it had to do with Ubuntu, and I've been playing with it a little bit at home on two different Macs, and I have to run two different versions of Ubuntu because because of compatibility issues.
Well, you got a G4 and an Intel.
Right. So the question is, and this is something that I came across on the internet on different forums, only one place did I find this, but apparently you cannot boot Ubuntu from an external drive. That's the claim that one fellow made on a forum. Is that accurate? If that's true, then I have to change my strategy.
Now, I have done this. As long as your BIOS, or whatever they call it on the Mac, lets you pick the boot drive.
It does.
I have done this. It was not an external drive. It was internal on a PC, because that's, you know, I didn't have an external drive to try it on. But certainly, as long as you can pick the drive, and as long as you have actually installed the operating system on that drive, then yeah, it should boot just as anything else would boot.
That makes sense to me, and I'm wondering if the fella that makes this claim is running it on a normal PC with a normal BIOS, as opposed to REFIs.
Right. So, it's very possible the problem is his. But I do know that I have seen people dual boot off of separate drives,
right?
Ubuntu and Windows.
And you should theoretically be able to use any number of external drives with a Mac.
Absolutely. Shouldn't be a problem.
Okay.
As long as you install it correctly, it'll boot correctly. He probably didn't, so I probably pulled the ISO over and suddenly it didn't boot.
Well, he may not be using a Mac as well.
Exactly.
All right.
All right, we're going to take another break. It is time for the news, the weather, the sports, all the information you really listen to Wham to for. And we'll be back on the other side of that with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Chris Reich, with Rob Linton, who's back free of jail. He loves being the idea of freedom. It's 59 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites. Well, as you know, every week on our website, we do a poll. Last week's poll, if I can find it here quickly, I'm way behind in what I was doing. Oh, is, of course, it was about OS X Leopard. Are you interested? 264 of you voted, making it number 240 on the all-time hit list. Thanks to each and every one of you who voted. And 81% said, what am I going to do with it? 13% of you said, I'm getting it. And 6% said, I've got it. This week's poll was based on an interesting article I read in the newspaper this week, online, actually. Facebook, the social networking website, has a reputation as the online space where hip young things hang out, swapping amusing anecdotes, poking one another, scrawling inappropriate messages on virtual walls, and posting embarrassing photos. But increasing numbers of over 50s are muscling in on the social networking arena, signing up to sites such as Facebook and its main competitor, MySpace, in droves. While some of the site's younger users are reacting as if dad just rolled up to the disco, the balance of power is shifting toward the so-called silver surfers. If you somehow manage to escape its lure, Facebook is like a giant online scrapbook for photos and messages swapped between and among friends. It was until September last year exclusively populated by America's college students poking each other and swapping pictures of each other's passed out under fraternity party beer kegs. Since then, the site has opened its doors to anyone with an email address and grown to include almost 60 million members, making it the world's seventh most visited website, behind soundbites, of course. Because the mind of an over 50 is likely superior to that of a drink-addled undergrad, at first there was uncertainty about whether older users would find the Facebook-led social networking phenomena attractive. You might, for example, question the broader demographic appeal of Facebook applications like Marry Me, Sex Me, Kill Me, in which your friends decide whether you're sexy, marriage material, or dead. But a recent study by analysts at ComScore showed that nearly one-third of Facebook users are aged 35 to 54, and this group also made up 41% of MySpace users. So what we're seeing is that older folks, us mature individuals, are finding ourselves more and more often going to places like Facebook and MySpace to hook up with folks for friendship or whatever that is.
There's always hotornot.com if you want to rate people.
Yeah, I know. I understand. So that's what this week's poll is about. The poll is my favorite networking site is, and the choices are Facebook, MySpace, Second Life, a nearby bar, a church social, and people, Fooey. So far, we've had 74 votes, and naturally, you folks being the Soundbites crew, your main number one choice is people, Fooey. Followed by a nearby bar, which I really thought would rank number one. Followed by a church social. Followed by Facebook, MySpace. And nobody so far has voted for Second Life. When you are done with your vote, you're just not going to be satisfied. I know that. Simply clicking a button doesn't do it for you. Luckily, if you click give us your opinion in the little yellow box underneath it, that will take you to my web space, AskNick.com. That's AskNick.com. Thank you, Wilhelm. Where you may then enter... you may then enter an opinion. So far, we've got seven of them there. Once you're done with that, please feel free to look around. I do a newsletter, which so far has been irregular, but within a couple of weeks, we'll go back to being completely regular, I promise. We also have our own set of forums. If you're a member, it's only $15 a year. I can't imagine why you wouldn't be a member. And when you're done with that, come on back to the Soundbite site and check all of that stuff out. Yes, Steve?
Somebody on YouTube put together a compilation of all of the Wilhelm screams.
Couldn't be all of them.
Well,
there's hundreds.
Yeah. Well, let's see how many. I don't know how many he says he has here, but it runs for 3 minutes.
Yeah.
So each scream is a couple of seconds long.
Right. He could have them all.
It's amazing where they show up in.
In everything. Well, it's now become a thing.
Yeah, they do it on purpose now.
Right, so it's like, yeah, who cares?
Sometimes, but what was the first
after
one?
After Star Wars, well, it was not Buona Devil. It was, something, and then they used it in a cowboy
Distant
thing.
Distant Drums, 1951.
Distant Drums, that was it. That was it. And then they used it in some sort of cowboy thing. Guy gets shot off his horse.
They think it was Sheb Woolley.
Yeah, it might have been. Nobody really knows. It's so far gone in the past now that nobody really knows. But yeah, it's the Wilhelm scream. All right, we are going to go back to the phones. We got time for the phones? Yeah, we do. We have plenty of time because this is our show. Our next caller is Don from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Don. What's your question?
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Peachy, well, how are you?
Doing good. Recently bought a laptop that came installed with Windows Vista Home Basic.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Wondering if I should upgrade that or if the Home Basic is fine for what I'm using it for.
What are you using it for?
Just general home use, internet, email, spreadsheets, work stuff.
Yeah, it should be fine.
Yeah, that should. Don't give Bill any more money.
90% of everything people want to do can be done with the lowest level of Vista. The only thing you might need to do is buy some extra things like a word processor or whatever. Or you could get the free one that comes with OpenOffice.org. You get
that's
a word
what
processor,
I've been putting on more
a spreadsheet,
machines.
Everything. Right. It does everything you'll want to do, and it does it for free.
Matter of fact, two machines that right now we've rebuilt that we're selling on our website. Very good machines, too, by the way. Offering them for a very good price. We have put open office on them and loaded it all up, literally, yep. with a lot of the freebies.
Yep.
Okay, actually, I was just looking into buying Microsoft Office Home and student version.
Sure.
This open office that you refer to is going to do the same thing?
Got a word processor, a spreadsheet, a program like PowerPoint, and a database.
Okay, great.
And in fact, you can read and write Word and Excel and PowerPoint files. In fact, I use OpenOffice at work, and nobody else knows it.
And
because I can swap files with them with no trouble.
And you can also export, say, a Word document out to PDF.
Right from the menu.
Which you can't do in Word.
And how do I go about getting that?
Just go to OpenOffice.org.
OpenOffice.org.
You okay, got it. Great.
Download it, install it, you be done.
You'll love it.
All right, great. Hey, okay. Thanks, guys.
Have fun.
Thank you. Good luck, Don. We just saved down a few $100.
And yeah. I posted a link to the comparison of what the different versions of Vista give you, if anyone wants to know.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right, our next caller is Roger from Rochester. Welcome, Roger. What do you know?
My wife has a XP Home, and she's been having trouble getting her Microsoft updates. What happens is the green thing that scans your computer, the arrow, checking for updates or something like
All right.
Well, it goes and goes and goes forever, and no screen comes up telling her what she needs. And I mean, it just goes forever. I have to just get out of it because,
right.
I mean, it goes maybe 2 hours. Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And this just started happening, I'd say, a month ago. Now, I'm no real expert in computers, but I have a lot of utilities in her computer that I ran. I mean, all kinds of cleanup stuff. I can't find any real reason. The problem is she's on Frontier dial-up, but, I mean, it works for everything else. It's so naturally slower than DSL. I personally have DSL, but her computer's in a different part of the house. And it's
just... Well, get her wireless. Just get a wireless card in hers, and you get a wireless router hub for your next to your machine. You're both on the wireless. She doesn't have to be on dial-up.
Well, that's true, but before we do that, is there any reason why this would be happening?
There are a couple of things that caused this. There was a Windows update.
Messed things up.
And then there was a couple of, if you had done some sort of repair to Windows, this can happen. You need to go to the Microsoft Update website and install the service pack or updates from there. And there, from there, you can download them as if they were just any kind of file, right? Instead of, you know, I mean, just the way you would download anything. And then from there, you can install them, and that should fix the problem.
Oh, okay. So where do I go to get this stuff? Then?
If you go to Internet, if you open up in Windows Explorer, and you go to Tools, and then there's the Updates.
Yeah.
Under the Updates, it'll take you to the Update page.
That's right.
And from there, you can then also do a custom install and select the items that you want to download in and install on the machine.
But if there's a bad one already installed that's preventing the future ones, that's the problem.
It. Well,
the problem
according is also to Microsoft, dial-up. That's the solution.
Yeah.
Right. The problem is you're on dial-up. If you can take your machine to a friend's house who's got broadband, this will happen.
He's got broadband there.
Take that computer upstairs.
To the other room.
I've got DSL on my computer. I could go get it, put it on an external disk, and then just pump it into hers.
No, the update you can't.
No, but what you can do is bring her machine, if she's got an Ethernet connection in her machine, you can just bring her machine over to your jack, plug it in there, and you're done.
How far away is her machine?
Hers is upstairs. Our office is upstairs, and she uses it for our small business. And mine is downstairs, and it's not like I can just drill a hole through the ceiling. I mean, it's quite a distance.
Yeah. Well, then bring her machine down, or yours up. Hers down, rather, because that's where the DSL is, temporarily. Yeah. Just unhook the box, and then hook her box in place of yours. Let her get into into DSL, if she's got a network card in it, and... download all and do all the updates there. It'll be faster, less time and effort on your part.
Okay, that's probably a pretty good idea then. Maybe that'll work.
Yeah. Another thing you can do if you want to, if you really love her and you want to make her happy, I hope she's listening, is you can buy a wireless router to connect to your DSL and then connect your machine to that with a wire and then buy her a little external USB wireless.
Linksys. I love the Linksys.
Card. I have a Linksys. My wife has a Linksys. We're in exactly the same situation. And then she connects to the internet through the wireless, even though it's a desktop, and then she doesn't have to do dial-up ever.
Okay. I'll definitely consider that then. Could I ask one small little question?
Go for it.
I had XP, which was running great, and apparently the power supply blew, but I loved that machine. I have Vista now, and I really would rather get the other one fixed. I was just wondering approximately what it would cost to get a new power supply and have it installed.
Power supplies are like $30 for, you know, the 450 watters, and that's usually just a half-hour charge to just put in a new power supply. $30. So you're looking at around about $60.
It's a Compaq Presario. The thing is only 3 years old.
Compaq. Some of those are proprietary.
You'd have to take it. Not, you know, clear cut. It's not a generic box. It's a proprietary box, and it would depend on the power supply.
Oh, okay.
But best thing to do is take it in and see if you can get an estimate.
Well, the thing of it is, I took it over to Compaq. They said, well, we'll have to keep it here, and we'll have to run all kinds of... They wanted to, before they even got started, they had a price tag of $150.
Yeah, a lot of places do that.
Yeah. Now, not just a quick look at it. I mean, if you want to drop...
But, I mean, people like you guys, could you...
Yeah, if you bring it by our shop, I'm at 70 Empire Boulevard, just off of 590, and bring it in, and for a diagnostics of $30, we'll take a look at it, see if we can get it repaired. If you decide to go with the repairs, we take the $30 off the repair.
All right, we're going to take another break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Lint, and me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 20 minutes after the hour. You are listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Well, let's pick on Mac Day. Updates issued Thursday by Apple Inc. did not fully solve lockout problems for some iMacs, and in some cases made the screen freezing worse, Mac owners were reporting on Friday. Apple acknowledged it is again looking into the issue. The two updates, Tag is 1.2 for Tiger, 1.3 for those who've upgraded to Leopard, are only vaguely described by Apple as important issue fixes that affect the 20-inch and 24-inch iMac models introduced 3 months ago. However, as users who pulled apart the updates Thursday suspected, they were designed to stop the lockups that have plagued iMac owners, said Lynn Fox, a company spokeswoman. Yes, they addressed the iMac screen freezing issue, Fox said. We encourage all users to apply the fixes. In early October, Apple acknowledged the lockups and said it was working on a software update that would be released as soon as we can, most likely later this month. Common characteristics of the freezing include inactive mouse and keyboard, continued background processing such as music that keeps playing, and the need for a reboot even though the screen remains lighted. Although some users posting to Apple support discussion said the update had put a stop to the intermittent lockups, many saw no decrease in the frequency. Freezing seems to be the same after installing the 1.3 update for many. A few even claimed that the update had exacerbated the problem. I updated and it actually got worse, said another user. When asked if Apple is aware of the reports that the updates haven't stopped the screen freezing, spokes individual Fox said, we are looking into it. Perhaps they're looking like into it, who had a couple of bad updates themselves just a year ago.
Yes. Well, the quarterly report came out a week or so ago, and Apple sold 2.1 million computers last quarter. So there's a chance that a few of them had problems.
Yep, no question.
Apple's now the number three computer manufacturer behind HP and Dell.
Yep.
But their market capitalization puts them well ahead of any other company in the tech industry.
Right.
They're the richest company in the tech industry.
Yep. Well, Rob, I think you should know that on the Soundbites chat room, they're having a discussion about the pros and cons of the various Ask Nick dings. Which ones they like better, the ding or some of the other things that you've put on over the time. Screens. And I thought you should just know that. Well, your efforts are appreciated and discussed.
Here's the deal. You know, what I would ask is, you know, isn't there something else maybe they could be doing? You know what I mean? But if that makes them happy and people have suggestions about the dings and that makes their day.
Whatever makes them happy makes us happy, because
I guess it could be bad because it could be the movie posters again, and we won't go there. People still have not left the Dorothy down.
Now that you
down.
Mentioned it.
Oh, here we go. Yeah, I know. Oops.
All right. Our next caller is Ed from Henrietta, New York. Welcome, Ed. What's your question?
Morning, guys.
Hi afternoon. There.
I think maybe you might answer my question. My aunt has a, she's 92. She's got an older iMac.
God love her.
I don't know anything about iMacs. I know something about PCs, but I was over there the other day, and it's email. When you click on the desktop icon on email, which he normally does, then a balloon will come up and will say, this is an alias, you have to do something. And then there's two other things, and then I'll shut up. I think they're related. And then to circumvent that, then you go up to the header, you pull that up, and, you know, where it says send home page, et cetera, there's an email icon, and there's the kind of like a little drop-down menu. It will, in fact, allow you to send and make stuff. But when you read, you click on the read, nothing happens. And then also periodically, she'll get a message that comes up and says your email is overloaded. Do something to the hard drive. I had no idea what I was talking about. Clean it or do whatever. But I tried to send myself something on Yahoo. I tried to send myself a message using my, I did about four times, and it wouldn't take the log on or wouldn't take the password. And when you put the mouse in there, the point of the arrow turned to a question mark. So I'm kind of stymied at all of these things, and I want to know if you could help an old lady.
Well, it's the exact error messages would help, but the first one, it sounds like, translating to Windows terms, she has a shortcut to her mail program on the desktop instead of the actual mail program. So you probably need to go into the applications folder and find the actual mail program instead of the shortcut. Sometimes the shortcuts are in Mac terms, aliases can forget or break the link back to the real program. Mm-hmm. So that's usually the problem there. Now, you mentioned something about space. There are two different issues that you may be running into. In email, you can get a message from your service provider saying that your mailbox is full because you're not deleting messages from your service provider. So you either need to change your mail settings so it deletes the mail when it downloads it to your computer, or you have to log into your service provider and delete the messages there. You can also get an error message on your own computer if your hard drive is full, and it will suggest that you delete files you don't need anymore if your hard drive is full. So depending on exactly what the error message is, makes a difference on what you do to fix it.
The bizarre thing was after I left, she called me later and she said, in desperation, she unplugged it and plugged it back in again, and it worked. So I'm just kind of scratching my head. I don't have a clue if it's right.
Tell her she can call the Mac Shack and apply for a job there.
Sometimes restarting the computer will fix weird little problems like that. She shouldn't have needed to actually unplug it. Just restarting it may have worked.
Right. I tried to reboot it when I was over there to help her, and I know, you know, something about Macs, but not like you guys do, because on the email, like, you know, on a PC, it just says delete, 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 and bang, it goes away, and it cleans it up.
Well, that's only on your local computer. You have to tell your email program to delete the mail from your internet provider server when you download it to your computer.
Now, that would be what, on the Mac help tutorial?
Probably. If you go into the mail program and then into preferences, there's an option there for how soon to delete mail from the server.
I got you. Okay, that helps a lot. Thanks a lot.
Sure.
Wouldn't it be cool having an 80-year-old
92,
woman there?
92, yeah.
92!
Yep.
As your tech support person.
Yeah. Now, one of the problems we run into now and then is the default settings in Apple Mail, I haven't checked in Leopard yet, are to leave your mail on your server for a week, which means you can look at it again if you go to another computer or you need to log into your mail server. Unfortunately, some providers, especially Roadrunner, only gives you 10 megabytes of mail space, and that may not be enough for a week. So you'll start getting error messages or emails from Roadrunner that your mailbox is full, or people who are trying to send you mail will get an error message back saying that your mailbox is full. And you need to go into your mail preferences and change the setting on how soon it deletes your mail.
Alternately now, Google gives you 4 gigabytes of email on Gmail.
Or Apple gives you 10 gigabytes.
And
Google is unlimited. I'm sorry, Yahoo is unlimited.
And I don't know about Yahoo or the Mac, but Thunderbird will do Gmail now as an IMAP client.
Nice.
How cool is that?
Yep.
That's very cool. That's very cool. All right, our next caller is Emmanuel on a cell phone. Welcome, Emmanuel. What's your question?
Yes, I'm running Windows XP Pro, and if I go to add remove programs, nothing shows up. It says there's a populating for a long time, nothing shows up. And I found this on two of my computers.
In other words, you've installed a number of, say, patches or other programs, and they're not there to uninstall?
You don't see any list at all. Normally, you go to add and remove programs, and it will list all the programs.
Right, and there should be a...
Well, he's saying he sees nothing.
Yeah, he's saying...
Yes, I see nothing. The only way, one time, what I had to do was buy a software for Registry Clean.
Yeah, it's most likely...
And I had an option, I can go in and see the programs, then I can install, but I can't install from Windows XP.
Right, it's most likely a corruption in your registry, because the Add Remove Control Panel looks in the registry for those programs. Finding what that corruption is and repairing it are very tricky.
Well, let's start with someplace else entirely. Some viruses blank the Add Remove program so that you can't remove the virus.
I see.
So one thing I would suggest you do is you dance the Security Tango. Go to securitytango.com.
Okay.
Click the Let's Dance button and follow the instructions.
Okay.
In fact, you can print that page out.
Okay.
And follow the instructions. That will clean out your machine completely.
Okay.
And that, if that brings back the Add Remove programs, then yes, it was definitely a virus that was preventing you
and
from seeing
it. And while he's
them.
There, one other thing that you might want to do is we've got the instructions on how to install Windows over Windows.
Yeah.
And if, you know, once you do the cleanup and you're not clicking on the Add Remove programs and not seeing them, what you're going to want to do is install Windows over top of Windows. Okay. It will repair that registry entry so that you can get that back.
Would I have all my links and programs all intact?
I'm sorry, say again?
Would I have my links, my shortcuts and everything all intact?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Right. I would start with the Tango, however.
Yes. First Tango, do the Tango. Definitely do the Tango first.
Yeah.
Because if you try to do an install over an install and you've got some Trojan or spyware program on there, you're just going to be spinning your wheels and doing install after install and getting frustrated.
Right.
Yeah, because I have AVG and I also have McAfee, but none of them is picking up any of
There are a lot of things. That's why you dance the whole tango. Okay. There are a lot of other things, spyware and stuff, that none of the antivirus programs pick up. So there's a whole regimen of things that you run to make sure your system is clean. You also turn off System Restore and a couple of other things.
Okay. It's Security Tango, right? Thank you.
SecurityTango.com. Click the Let's Dance button. Print it out. Follow it step by step. Do not skip any steps. All righty. That's the thing that most makes me crazy is when people
Smiley
say...
Smiley here calls a window over... Windows over Windows.
Yeah.
It's actually a storm window.
Thank you.
Which is true.
Thank you very much.
It'll be on again at 11.
Try the veal. I find people writing me all the time, you know, I got to this step and I couldn't do it. Well, what happened at this previous step? Oh, I skipped that one because I didn't understand what I meant. Well, then don't write to me if you skip steps because you're not doing the tango anymore. You're just stumbling around. All right, our next caller.
We'll go
to Ray in Greece. Welcome, Ray. What's your question?
Hi. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Well, I got the head deal last year. I'm a 60-year-old man, and I last year was totally computer naive. I certainly learned a lot. I heard you mention something, and I came across it on my computer in the email, and that is on the C-SPAM I have. When I delete it, it says it sends it to a deleting place?
Right.
Where does it send it? I mean, I want to get rid of it for good.
What is your email program?
Outlook. 8.5?
Right. Where it sends it to is the deleted items folder.
Okay.
Which you'll see in the list. And then every once in a while, you should go into the deleted items folder.
How do I do that?
You click on it just like you do any folder.
Where is it?
It's listed on the left along with all of your other folders.
Your inbox and your outbox, your sent mail, there'll be a deleted items.
Okay.
That, see, what that lets you do is undelete something if you decided you didn't want to delete it after all.
But every once in a while, you should go in there and then delete everything there because it's just accumulating and taking up space on your hard drive.
Yeah, preferences, you can.
I was very confused on that.
Now
and
you know.
Also, in 2 weeks, my warranty is going to expire.
Yes.
It's a.
So in 3 weeks, it's going to break. they know.
They were great to work with, I'll tell you that. They were a big help and had a lot of patience with me. And plus, I had some legitimate problems they had to send a deck for. They were just great to work with.
Good.
But well, anyway, it's an Optiplex 210L.
Yeah.
And my question is, being on a fixed income, is there some kind of insurance or something I can buy in case, like, I get a virus or something?
For that, I would just be honest with you. The machine is more is a couple years old. Just bide your time and just do your due diligence of the Security Tango. Do the maintenance there. That should keep you in good shape. With trying to buy insurance on, you know, well,
and you're never going to find insurance for software problems. You could find insurance if the hardware breaks.
But even the hardware, and folks are getting to where, you know, it just costs too much to replace because by the time the machine is a couple years old, it's already outdated, and getting replacements for a lot of this stuff, like, say, a motherboard or something like that, is very hard.
Right. All right, we got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 40 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Google is announcing a mobile platform tomorrow. Google negotiators this weekend continue to hammer out agreements with wireless carriers, handset makers, software developers, and hardware providers as the company prepares to announce on Monday an ambitious platform for creating mobile applications. Although Google has declined to comment for months on its rumored move into the mobile space, sources said the company will make an announcement Monday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, and the details of the plan are being finalized this weekend. Google will announce. Of course, Rob, Wham is going to send me to that, aren't they? Quick trip to Kelf. That's going to happen, isn't it?
Yeah, did you get that memo?
I did not. I did not.
I thought I saw a phrase on the bottom of it when something froze over.
Oh, well, and they said they'll reimburse you and just to wait for the check.
Yeah.
Just wait for
check
it.
Yeah, just
mail.
Wait for it. Okay, just stand by the mailbox and wait for it.
Not a problem. It'll be interesting to see what happens. There's already a program called GOS at, I think it's thinkgos.com, I think. Yes? Yes, it is. There it is. It's a version of Linux. I believe it's a version of Ubuntu using the Enlightenment front end. It basically has Facebook and all the Google apps.
It looks like a Mac with a dock at the bottom.
No, excuse me. This interface has been available for the Linux for about 6, 7, 9 years now. So, no, that is not looking like a Mac. Macs are looking like the dock in Enlightenment. But so that's available. Apparently, you can get the GPC at Walmart for a couple of $100. I'm this close to buying one. $200 computer at Walmart.
Well, Christmas is coming.
Nick is holding his thumb and forefinger about a half inch apart.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Oh, yeah, you'll want to be able to see that. The people on the webcam have got that. There's two fingers there, and they're being held about a half an inch apart. But at any rate, it's the GPC, $199. It's a throwaway computer, you know, for $200, it's not going to last you 10 years. And it runs this GOS operating system, which has all this stuff in it. Google is trying to take over the world. I think we know that. I don't believe this operating system comes from Google, but it certainly is closely aligned with Google. I tried to download it, but it seemed to me there was something wrong with the download. We'll see what happens. I'll try it again later this afternoon. I've been looking to run it, but we'll see.
You say it's an Ubuntu derivative, Nick?
Yeah. Yeah, I believe it is. It's just a different front end. It uses Enlightenment instead of GNOME.
Oh, okay.
So it's actually much faster. Our next caller is Keith, who's quietly and patiently sitting in his driveway. Keith, are you on a cell phone, or did you drag the phone outside?
No, I'm on the cell phone.
All right. Okay.
Hey, I got to suggest, I listen usually every weekend, but I'm listening today.
Keith, did they make you go outside to listen?
Well, no, there's...
It's like everybody else is in the house having fun, and Keith wants to listen. I said, Keith, get in the car. The hell with you. Get out in the car.
We'll all come together, but I finished this call.
Okay.
Suggestion on a category, you know, when you have the question that you post.
Yeah.
What do you do while you're listening to sound bites?
Oh.
Okay.
I don't know
I'm
that
not
I
sure
want to
know.
Up that.
Yeah.
And the reason why I came up with this is went to visit. No, I'm an old guy, but midlife crisis, bought a used sports car, and I am presently washing cow manure all off the underside of the car.
Where the heck were you?
I was out in Hooterville, but apparently somebody had a manure spreader that was leaking fluid, and I drove through, and I get home, I pull in the garage, I go, what that smell, and oh, God.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I've ever heard. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
Thank you. Nice, nice, Rob.
Very good.
That's funny.
You're enjoying the smell of nature at its best.
A friend of mine bought a brand.
I anticipated as best as I can, but just doesn't want to go down the driveway.
Yeah, I can understand that. A friend of mine once bought a new car. It was a Karmann Ghia, as a matter of fact, if you remember those.
Yeah, my wife had one.
He spent about an hour and a half going on and on about the new car smell. Then he went and picked up his girlfriend, and she stepped in dog poop just before she stepped in the car. And so for months, we went on about the new car smell.
But that would be a good idea for a question. What do you do while you're listening?
It's a great idea. Thank you, Keith. I appreciate that. Because we know it's not going to be anything bad, because listening to sound bites is nothing if not a buzzkill.
Do we list taking cow manure off your car?
We'll have to make that one of the choices. Yeah, right. All right, our next caller is Frank from Greece, New York. Welcome, Frank. What's your question?
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
I'm sitting in a parking lot on a cell phone.
Very good.
I have a computer that's like 9 years old, an old gateway that I want to donate.
Mm-hmm.
Could you tell me the best way to erase any personal material from my C drive?
Just format the drive.
A 50-ton press.
Yeah. There are programs that will retrieve data from almost anything you could do to format it.
But is the average person going to do that? Most likely not. So if you go ahead and just format the whole hard drive.
Well, I'm going to find our list in a minute. We've talked about in the past, there's a couple of programs you can download that will do a secure erase where it actually overwrites the data on the drive with ones or zeros.
Or
ones and zeros. Yeah. Yeah, there's some commercial ones.
Or would you say that this unit is so old that I should just physically remove the hard drive and toss the tower?
That's probably your best bet. Remove the hard drive and just set it somewhere.
How big is the hard drive?
Just set it out to the curb, and I guarantee you, if it's anything like my neighborhood, I put it out to the curb, and it lasts maybe, especially on trash night, I put it out to the curb, and it's gone before the trash men show up.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, I've even done old TVs.
And I've done that 100 times. I can't tell you how big the stack is of old drives that I'll never plug into anything again.
I've got an old copier that's going out and an old PC.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco. And you, it is 15 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And in 55 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. Hey, for all you folks who use Firefox, there is a new update, 2.0.0.9. It was released Thursday. It's a stability fix. Does not address any security issues. It's not the fix that you folks on Leopard have been looking for. That's coming next, but it is a stability fix, which solves a couple of Java not found errors and a couple of other things. So you should download it and use it. You will find that it's a good, much more stable environment. Our next caller is Stu from Penfield, New York. Welcome, Stu. What's your question?
Hi, how you doing? Actually, I don't have a question. It was a fellow that called about 20 minutes ago or so where he was missing ad remove programs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Emmanuel.
One of the very common problems of that that can cause that is when you install an application, often it puts extra spaces in your registry, which actually causes the add remove programs to appear blank. But if he looks on the right-hand side, he might have a scroll bar. And if he scrolls all the way to the bottom, he might find all of his programs there.
Oh,
It's padding the first screen that you see with a lot of blanks.
Exactly. And then if you scroll all the way to the bottom, it's a good possibility. I mean, it may not be the problem, but it's a good possibility.
Hey, it's something to try.
That's a great thought, Stu. Thank you.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
I love it. My favorite part of the show is when users call up and give us answers to things.
That would tend to make, yeah, you open their first screen. When you click on the add remove program, you don't see anything. But folks don't think to look along the
side.
That's,
yeah, scroll down. That's the subtle difference between nothing and blank.
Right.
And a space, which looks like nothing.
Right. So what's happened is, of course, it sorts everything alphabetically. The first thing it would sort is spaces. They rise to the top, and you have to scroll down to see. And that actually makes
a
lot of sense.
If they have it sort by that down, you'd have a full page of blanks.
Right, right, right. That's pretty interesting.
That's cool.
Chris, I have to talk to you for a moment here. You've been doing yeoman service, doing the podcast every week.
You're
and
very
giving
generous with
generously of your time and effort and knowledge and skill to do that. Now, the podcast is working now, and this last one was the highest quality one yet.
Thank you.
So I'm very impressed with that. We did have a little trouble with the
if anyone knows why you can't put an ampersand in an RSS feed, let us know.
Right. But once you took out all the ampersands, which I'm now not using anymore, which is too bad because it slows down my typing by two letters every time I enter
an amp. Oops.
Yeah, right. Like, that matters. But one of the problems we apparently were having is that, well, Steve is kind enough to add all the stuff that I put into the thing.
It's, yeah, more description on the show and what questions were asked.
Right, but I've been using an ampersand to make my typing quicker, and apparently that's been causing problems with the feed. So I'll stop doing that, and we should all be good. But Chris has been generously donating all his time and effort, and the podcast, I think, is sounding really good. Well, I'm glad. We're certainly delighted to have you here to do this. All right, we are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Mr. Rob Linton, who is back with us. I'm delighted to see that. We're probably chasing him away next week again, but it's good to see him here one week.
Oh, no,
out of
next
four.
Week I have to host the Home Repair Clinic and Garden Show.
Oh, and then that's more important to you than us.
Well, you know, whatever. I do what they tell me.
You know how we rate.
All right, so those of you who miss Rob's dulcet tones will be able to hear them on Saturdays.